תפילת החברים.
Prayer of the friends. We thank you for the opportunity to think and pray for the great friends. You have chosen these friends from all over the world. Please bless all the friends of the world Kli so that they will succeed in their actions of connection, study, dissemination, and other tasks to reveal the real wisdom of truth to humanity. Help us understand and carry out our mission to spread the light and continue to work for you and give you contentment. Please do it loudly and clearly. Concerning the slanderers, it is written in the Zohar, Rabbi Yehuda started and said, happy are the people who know the cheer. See how people must follow the path of the Creator and keep the mitzvot, the commandments of the Torah, so that through it they will be rewarded with the next world and be saved from all the slanderers above and below. This is so because as there are slanderers in the world below, there are slanderers above who stand ready to slander people. We should understand what are the slanderers below. This is understandable with regard to the above, that if we want to give something to a person, slanderers come and complain about that person, saying he should not be given what he is about to be given. But below, this begs the question, before whom are they complaining about the person? We should interpret that the slanderers come to the person himself. If a person wants to go by the path that ascends towards bestowal upon the Creator, slanderers come and tell him, the way of bestowal is not for you. This way is suitable only for a chosen few, with special qualities and talents, brave hearts, strong, and who are able to overcome. But not you, for you don't have the qualities of those above the common folk. Therefore, it is better for you to dwell among your own people, meaning follow the path of the general public and don't aspire to be exceptional.
ולא שיהיה לך רצון להיות יוצא מהכלל. לזה בא רבי יהודה.
In that regard, Rabbi Yehuda comes and tells us the verse, happy are the people who know the cheer. Rashi interpreted that they know how to appease their maker. How do they appease him? By him pouring abundance upon them. Rabbi Yehuda interprets about that they must go by the path of the Creator and observe the mitzvot, the commandments of the Torah. We should understand what are the ways of the Creator. The verse comes and tells us about that. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways. That is, only above reason can one walk by the path of the Creator. But within reason, the body itself is his slanderer and accuser, making him understand that the path of bestowing upon the Creator is not for him. By this you will understand the verse, you shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the clear-sighted and distorts the words of the righteous. We therefore see that when one comes to scrutinize the order of his work and sees the conditions required of him, he decides that he cannot take upon himself this path, which is the work of bestowal, for two reasons.
Aleph, kischar avoda
One, he is not 100% certain about the reward for his work, since he does not see anyone who has received the reward for which he has labored. That is, when he comes to criticize people who he sees that they did not toil and tolerated the conditions of the work, he sees that they really did make great efforts. However, he does not find that they have already received the reward for their work. If he asks himself why they did not receive reward, he comes up with a great excuse. One who keeps all the conditions of the work certainly receives reward. However, they made great efforts, but not the 100% required of them. This is why, when they are in a state where they believe he is ejecting them from the work, for they believe that they are right and the work of bestowal is not for them. At that time, a second question comes up. Who knows if he will be more capable than they are, and he will be able to give the full 100% required to be brought to dvikut with the Creator, to adhesion with the Creator. After those two reasons, he decides that he is 100% right in not wanting to take upon himself this path, which is built on faith above reason, and on the basis of bestowal. He is so certain that he is right that he is sure that no one can criticize his unwillingness to take this path. Accordingly, there is a question. Those people who did commence on this path, who have taken upon themselves to walk on the path of bestowal, how did they overcome those questions? Certainly, when one is told, go work, but not in order to receive reward, immediately asks all these questions, since these questions give one no rest. Thus, by which force could they emerge from the state of questions, which are called evil waters? The only way is to go above reason and say, what I see, that I am right and I must take the path that everyone takes, is not the truth, as I see it. Only one whose eyes are open can see the truth. But one whose eyes are not open cannot see the truth. When a person asks these questions, he is biased towards his will to receive, since he is considering only the benefit he can derive for himself. Therefore, he can no longer see the truth. The verse comes and tells us about that, you shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the clear-sighted. Therefore, it cannot be said that he is right according to his view, because he is bribed by the will to receive. So he no longer has open eyes to see the truth. Instead, he should say, although I heard all your correct questions, now I am unable to answer you. But once I've been rewarded with a desire to bestow, I will have open eyes. Then, if you come to me with all your questions, I will certainly give you the right answers. But now I have no choice but to go above reason, because all the reason that I see comes from the side of biasness. Although I think that all my calculations are correct, it should be said about them what the verse tells us distorts the words of the righteous, that I'm unable to see who is right, meaning say that everything that must be done in order to bestow was not said about me, and I dwell among my own people, like everyone else who settles for keeping Torah and mitzvot, saying, I do what I must do.
שכל החשבונות שלי הם צודקים, על זה יש לומר מה שהפסוק אומר לנו, ויסלף דברי צדיקים. שאין אני מוכשר לראות...
Concerning intentions, this pertains to one who feels he needs it. I, for one, do not feel that I need to be smarter than everyone, and I am content with less. It was said about this, distorts the words of the righteous, but I go above reason.
This
is the meaning of the great importance of cleanliness, which is presented in all the books, that one must clean before every commandment one is about to do. And regarding cleanliness, Bala Sulam said that one should be careful that everything will be on the side of truth and that no falsehood will be involved there. He also said that as there is a difference between people concerning keeping clean, there are people who make sure there is no dirt on their clothes, and there are people who are not so meticulous and the dirt is plainly visible, so they remove it. That is, it depends on the measure of loathing that one has for the dirt. It is likewise in spirituality. No person is like another, and it depends on the extent to which one loathes falsehood. So that to the extent that he cannot tolerate falsehood, he comes closer to the path of truth.
שלא יש שום לכלוך על בגדו. ויש אנשים שלא מקפידים כל כך, אלא שהלכלוך גלוי לעיניים, אז הם מסירים
את הלכלוך. He also said that we must know that this dirt in matters of the soul is the true harm doer. Since the soul is eternal, one should be very careful with falsehood and keep one's truth clean from any manner of falsehood.
ובשיעור זה שהוא לא יכול לסבול את השקר, ובשיעור זה הוא מתקרב לדרך האמת.
By this we understand what our sages said. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said, Rabbi Yochanan said, every wise disciple who is found with a blemish on his clothes must die. As it was said, all who hate me love death. Do not call it hate me, but cause to hate me. Rashi interprets that cause to hate. To hate me means that they make themselves loathsome in the eyes of people, and the people say, woe unto the disciples of the Torah, for they are loathsome and dishonorable. It turns out that they make the Torah loathsome. Superficially, this is difficult to understand. If he has a blemish on his clothes, does he deserve to die? He brings evidence from the verse, all who hate me love death. Here too, we should understand, if he hates me, is this a sign that he loves death? According to what we explained above, that cleanliness pertains to the need to be clean. So there will be no mixture of falsehood there when he wants to walk on the path of truth. Truth is called lishma, for her sake. As Maimonides says, one who works out of love, engages in Torah and mitzvot, and follows the paths of wisdom, not because of anything in the world, or because of fear of harm, and not in order to inherit goodness. Rather, he does the truth because it is the truth, and the good will finally come because of it. Therefore, it means that concerning finding a blemish in his clothes, which are regarded as clothes within which one receives goodness and life, They must be cleansed from any mixture of self-love and be only for the Creator. According to this, we will interpret, all who hate me love death. We asked, why does the verse say, all who hate me, meaning the reason he hates me, is that he loves death? According to the above, this is simple. The meaning of death is clarified, since precisely one who is adhered to the life of lives has life. But one who is separated from him is separated from life. This is why it was said, all who hate me, meaning who do not love the Creator, to work only for the Creator, but mix there a little bit of self-love, and self-love is death, because it causes separation from the life of lives. For this reason, one who loves death, meaning self-love, becomes hateful of the Creator because of it. Rashi interprets, cause to hate me, to mean that they make themselves loathsome in the eyes of people. People say, woe unto the disciples of Torah, for they are loathsome and dishonorable. It follows that they cause to hate the Torah. This is difficult to understand. If there is a stain on his clothes, he is already loathsome in the eyes of people. And also, does the Torah cause people to hate the Torah so much that for this he deserves the punishment of death? As our sages said, every wise disciple who is found with a blemish on his clothes must die.
והבריות אומרות, אוי להם ללומדי התורה שהם מאוסים.
In the work, we should interpret that making themselves loathsome in the eyes of people means one's own organs, desires and thoughts. Man's body is called a world in and of itself. The organs of the body say, woe unto them who study Torah, for they are loathsome. But it is written, for they are our lives and the length of our days. And they are more desirable than gold, than much fine gold, and sweeter than honey and the honeycomb. But we don't see this with our disciples of Torah. The reason why we do not see all these precious things in the disciples of Torah is that there is a blemish on their clothes, meaning that there is self-love mingled in our disciples of Torah during the work. It follows that this blemish causes the good and the life in the Torah not to be able to clothe in these clothes, since they are not clean, where everything is for the Creator. At that time, the people in our body fall into despair. It follows they are causing them to hate the Torah. That is, where the disciples of the Torah should have revealed the preciousness of Torah, as it is written, for it is your wisdom and understanding before the eyes of the nations. Here they see the opposite. And who caused all this? It is all because they were not careful with cleanness, which is called a blemish. By this we will understand why he must die if there is a blemish on his clothes. It tells us that the blemish that he makes in his clothes separate from him from the life of lives. This is why this is considered that he is compelling himself to come to a state of death. And it is all because he was not careful with his cleanness. But falsehood, called Olishma, was mixed into his work. Rather, everything must be for the Creator.
ובזה נבין מדוע
Last paragraph again. By this we will understand why he must die if there is a blemish on his clothes. It tells us that the blemish that he makes in his clothes separate him from the life of lives. This is why this is considered that he is compelling himself to come to a state of death, and it is all because he was not careful with cleanliness. But falsehood, called lo lishma, not for a sake, was mixed into his work. But everything must be for the Creator.
אז לא ברור, אני נסה לעקוב כל הזמן, ורבש כל הזמן
trying to follow, and it's unclear. Rabash is like changing angles to find this is it good or not good, is it condition or not.
It's necessary in order to correct it.
אבל נקיות אף פעם לא, אין נקיות.
But there is no such thing as cleanness. The more we search, the more falsehood we find.
Well, but in between, nevertheless, we are in states where we feel that there is cleanliness and there is no cleanliness, there is and there isn't, and this is how we advance from degree to degree.
So what
does it mean when he says here at the end that also a state of falsehood will be involved in his work? Called Olishma, but everything is for the Creator.
Yes, that whatever he's capable of will be for the Creator. Whatever he's not capable of, he hopes that. Yes, Owen?
Rav,
it says here that the extent that he cannot tolerate the lie, to this extent he comes closer to the path of truth. And also it says here that he makes the truth because it is the truth. What is the falsehood? What is the truth? Rav, this is with respect to the person, as much as it is revealed in what state he is in. If he is in the state of truth, meaning according to what he discovers, then he is in the truth. This is according to how much he discovers. And if he discovers that he also has within him the quality of falsehood, then he does everything in order to rise above it. Falsehood towards, with respect to what? Rav, falsehood with respect to the Creator. Maybe you want to ask, can he measure this falsehood, this lie towards the society, towards the ten? Yes.
בסדר.
Okay.
כן.
Yes.
יוצא.
It turns out,
אם אני לא מגזים,
if I'm not exaggerating, that
חייבים להגיע למצב,
we must reach a state
בלתי אפשרי לסבול את
השקר, where it is impossible to tolerate the falsehood, where we discover the falsehood all the way, and we see that there is a decree of a sentence of death, and we turn to him because only he can save us from it. Rav, yes. Yes.
Rav, I wanted to ask, Rabash writes throughout the whole article that he doesn't have any other advice but to go above reason. He keeps returning to that.
But
how can you go above reason if what enables a person to even start going above reason?
What enables the person that he depicts himself this way, that he is entirely in falsehood, even though he cannot recognize it according to how he feels, but he must rise above it. Above reason means that we discover that we have to relate in such a way to our situation that seemingly as if we discover the truth.
Can
yes?
Determining that this moment is falsehood. How can that be determined? That you determine now is falsehood. In relation to what do you decide this? In relation to what is this falsehood determined?
In relation to my state. I have nothing more.
Okay, but my state in relation to what? To define something as falsehood, it needs to be defined in relation to something. So in relation to what do I define it as falsehood?
Respect to how I am right now in my relation to the Creator.
If I don't have a relation to the Creator, is that called falsehood?
No, if you don't have it at all, then you have no way to determine it.
Okay, that's clear. So there needs to be some relation to the Creator.
I must determine that the Creator is the truth, and all of his deeds, all his actions, all of his qualities are the truth, and this is standard, an absolute standard that I have before me, and I am in falsehood.
Now, when you identify you're in a state of falsehood, what is this action that you rise above reason?
I search for what can I do in order to rise above the different states, above my state.
And the ability to determine truth, is that only above reason? Can that be determined or what? Where is truth determined?
Above reason.
So it turns out that in reason you're always in a state of falsehood.
That's right, yes.
So again, I mean, my first question, from this falsehood, how do you rise to above reason? How do you begin to rise to above reason?
Here, actually, the question is a different one. How, without being in falsehood, can I rise above reason?
That's clear. It sounds like you can't rise above reason if there is no falsehood.
That's right.
Okay, so still, it's how can you enter the work of above reason?
From the falsehood. I want to cancel this state and rise above it, and I demand from the Creator that He will help me to rise above it.
Rav,
what does it mean that I must determine that the Creator is truth and all His actions are true?
We accept that, of course, without checking, without any criticism, but rather we accept it as a given. And we work according to that.
What do we accept as a given? What does it mean that the Creator is truth?
that the Creator is called the truth.
What does that mean?
The truth means that He is in 100% bestowed. And He cannot cause anyone anything bad.
And why is that the truth?
We accept it this way.
And why is bestowal truth?
We accept it this way. This is how we accept it. And then, when we go for it, we reach a state where we see, we feel, we prove to ourselves that indeed it is true.
Rav, ma hevdel ben pulot vekavanot she'adam lo matzliach
la'asot? What's the difference between the actions and intentions that a person is not able to do and falsehood?
If he doesn't succeed in doing that, then he doesn't succeed.
Doesn't
mean anything. He just doesn't succeed. He doesn't recognize where he is.
So what is falsehood?
Falsehood is when he recognizes it and he says, Owen.
Rav, מה זה הלכלוך?
Rav, what is this dirt?
The dirt. It's what doesn't let you see the truth in its true manner.
כן.
איך לזהות את הלכלוך הזה?
How do I identify this dirt?
זה לא פשוט.
Well, this is not simple.
זה מתגלה.
It becomes revealed through all kinds of states and in between the states. However, mostly, it's through the work between us. That's how it is.
And
how to not hide this dirt and how to not sweep it under the rug.
Well, a person cannot do it by himself. Here it's already group work.
And what is the work here?
That if he works on it together with the friends, then he sees that he's hiding the dirt, or maybe it's the opposite, he's disclosing it and taking it out of all kinds of states.
And what cleans this dirt?
When a person sees the dirt in its true form, this cleans the dirt.
And this true vision, where does he get it from?
From the friends, through the friends.
How does he get this correct view?
He recognizes his falsehood in relation to the others.
What is his falsehood in comparison to the other?
Because he sees, relative to the others,
so how do you not fall into this? He writes here that you constantly answer these questions and that you're bribed. And how do you not fall into that?
You're always in a bribe. Sometimes you recognize you can get out of it.
No.
Can this be done permanently?
Oh, it's with the help of the environment and through your own effort.
So
the work is always to discover this dirt, to discover that you're also lying to yourself, and then to always reach a prayer.
Yes. You always start with in a state where a person wants to discover that he is dirty.
מקביו 4 שואלים בהמשך ל
question from Kabyu 4,
איך אנחנו יכולים להיות זהירים?
How can we be cautious in keeping this clean, this cleanness? What does it mean?
That we clean ourselves, and each time we try to be more and more clean in directing ourselves towards connection and unity,
עוד יותר ויותר למעלה
and more and more above reason, and then bit by bit we come to a state where like with a knife we're truly going forward and cleaning the
Good morning, dear Rav. What exactly is the slanderer and what does the slanderer want to reach?
All kinds of forces that seemingly want to deflect us from the path. And this is ultimately in order to direct us to a more correct, more precise path, more direct towards the goal. Later on, we discover that, but in the meantime, we fight with them, seemingly. Yes?
Almar arzusuna meyil etmiştir ve bu nedenle gerçeği göremez cümlesini açabilir misiniz? Nasıl bu durumun farkındalığına gelir?
It's written here that while a person asks all these questions, he is bribed towards his will to receive because he sees what can come out for his own self-benefit and he's no longer able to see the truth. Could you explain that? And if that's the case, how can a person recognize his true state?
A person should look at the purpose of creation, and it doesn't matter how much he feels that it's to his benefit or not to his benefit, but rather the truth is what pulls him. Item 174. We should know that the Naran of the righteous permanently clothe only the Pertsufim of Bia below the Parsa. Nefesh clothes the 10 Sfirot of Asiya. Ruach, the 10 Sfirot of Yetzira. And Neshama, the 10 Sfirot of Bria. It turns out that although they receive from Zone of Atzilut, it still reaches them only through the Pertsufim Bia, which clothe over them. Thus, the Naran of the righteous too rise along with the ascents of the three worlds Bia. It turns out that the worlds Bia too grow only according to the measure of reception of abundance by the Naran of the righteous, meaning according to the man sorted by them.
Meaning we don't have anything special here or in addition to the worlds of Bia, but only all in all, it's all according to the deficiencies that are awakening the souls of the righteous.
175. Wait, yes, Oren? What is the Naran of the righteous? Where does it come from?
Nefesh Ruach Neshama of the same vessels that want to reach it. And then later on, maybe even to reach Chaya and Yechida.
So where do they come from? What is this creature called the righteous? Where was it born? What is that?
They are considered to be the future. the future actions of the Creator and they come from the fact that they need to correct their own vessels. And it's lacking in the vessels of Bia. The fact that they raise man, they raise the vessels of Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida to a higher degree.
This is what they cause in the system. But who are they on their own? Where did they come? When did they come to the playing field? I mean, who are they, these righteous?
Naran of the righteous are the vessels that are in the world of Bia, and they need correction. And by the lights that are awakened, they act on these vessels and they correct them.
How did these vessels arrive at the worlds of Bia? Where did they come from?
From above, from the shattering, all these vessels, they fall below, and we awaken in the world of Bia. These lights, they awaken the vessels, and they lift them to higher degrees.
The shattering of what? The shattering of Adam HaRishon?
Yeah, it's all from the shattering.
Okay, so there's a shattering of the soul of Adam HaRishon. Now the broken pieces, some of them are going to be called the righteous.
Eventually they're all righteous because they are awakened. But for the time being, this is how we see them.
Okay, so first they're broken vessels. When the shattering occurs, these are broken vessels, and something happens, so later on they become vessels of the righteous. So what happens there that turns them from broken vessels into vessels of the righteous?
The light that we awaken, they influence them, and then they start to rise. And join the corrected vessels.
Who awakens these lights?
We do. We do by wanting our desires, our vessels.
The one that manages the entire process of correction is the world of Atzilut.
Well, I would say it's the head of heads.
But the one who executes it, the implementation, execution, is in the world of Atzilut.
Yes, that's the world of Atzilut.
There are two phases, as I understand it here. Completion of the ten sefirot of the first kind and of the second kind, right? First kind is that the lower one rises to the place of the upper one, there it is completed with ten sefirot. And the second kind that should happen is in the place of the lower one. Okay, so if Atzilut did the completion of the ten sefirot of the first kind, and a lower one rose to the place of the upper one, there it received an example of how to complete itself with ten sefirot, why doesn't it go to its place and do it in its place, the lower one? Why doesn't it finish this completion?
Who is he?
When the completion of the first of the tensor of the first kind begins, the Pratsufim of Atzilut emerge and they start to complete themselves in this format where the lower one rises to the upper one and it learns there in Gar of Atzilut how to complete the Tensfirot, right?
Yes.
So what should be the next stage? That this example that it received, the lower Pratsufim now go and do it in its place.
Yes.
Why doesn't it do it?
Where will it get strength from?
So why was it shown an example for?
To go down, do you understand what masach, what screen he needs? To be in the same sanctity as above, now to be below.
What's there, below?
There are much thicker, coarser vessels to deal with that in order to bestow. He needs to receive more strength.
Okay, and in what stage? So this is how the world of Atzilut starts to emerge, right? It starts with the very first example. Completion of the first kind, where the lower one rises to the place of the upper one. Next, what happens next? It was given an example. What next?
He
receives the lights. And he advances himself with these lights to be connected with higher vessels.
He is constantly connected to higher vessels.
Man
of tzaddikim, of the righteous. And so on.
Why isn't the completion of the second type occur? What's lacking for completing the ten sefirot and the second type will be completed? He says, even in Atzilut, it's only in Gar of Atzilut there's a completion of the second kind, but it doesn't go down to Zat, to the Gufim. Why not?
Why would it help? How will it help us if it goes down to the Gufim? We need either the shattering or the upper light that will enter these vessels in some way that they don't have the screens and will give them strength.
So why doesn't he do it? Why doesn't he enter?
Wait.
He
will.
In the world of Atzilut, there's like something that happens only in the Rashim and doesn't go to the Gufim.
Right.
What is this thing that is only in the Rashim and doesn't go down to the Gufim?
Why doesn't it continue to the bodies, to the Gufim?
Yeah, in Tona we didn't see something that doesn't happen in the ocean not go to the Guf. That's the whole point. But now in Atzilut there's this mechanism that something happens in the Rosh and remains there. So why did it happen? The whole essence of the Rosh is to plan something for the Guf.
That there will be proper raising of the man. It can't happen any other way. What's in the Rosh spreads in the Guf, that's from above downwards, but below upwards, that's how we work. There's no such thing that what's in the Rosh spreads in the Guf. There needs to be raising of man, another demand, a serious one, the lower one. That will shake up.
Baal Sulam is actually the first Kabbalist who writes to us about the state of affairs of our generation and the last generation. And in that, he's very unique, because we really want to know what's going on with us and where are we headed? Where are we developing towards? The force of development is pushing us from behind. And where is it pushing us? We don't exactly know. If we look from one day to the next, we might seem to ourselves as if we're doomed. And Therefore, we have to understand what's going on in the system that we're in. So, what does it say there? What does it write?
So, we'll
start reading. They haven't sent us the study materials, so we'll be there in a minute. It's in the writing of Bala Sulam, the preface to the last generation, building the future society. A story about a society, hungry and thirsty. One of them had found a settlement filled abundantly with every delight. He remembered his poor brothers, but he had already drawn far off from them and did not know their whereabouts. What did he do? He began to shout out and blow the horn. Perhaps his poor hungry friends would hear his voice and approach him and come to that settlement that is filled with every delight. So is the matter before us. We have been lost in the terrible desert along with all of humanity. And now we have found a great abundant treasure, namely the books of Kabbalah is in the treasure. They satisfy our yearning souls and fill us abundantly with lushness and contentment. We are satiated, and there is more. Yet, we remember our friends who were left hopeless in the terrible desert. There is a great distance between us, and words cannot bridge it. For this reason, we have set up this horn to blow out loud, so that our brothers might hear and draw near and be as happy as we are. Know, our brothers, our flesh, that the essence of the wisdom of Kabbalah is the knowledge of how the world came down from its elevated heavenly place until it reached our ignoble state. This reality was necessary as the end of an act is in the preliminary thought, and this thought it acts instantaneously, for he needs no tools to work with as we do. Thus we were emanated in Ein Sof, infinity, in utter perfection from the start, and from there we came down to this world. It is therefore very easy to find all the future corrections which are destined to come from the perfect worlds that preceded us. Through it we know how to correct our ways henceforth, like man's advantage over the beast. For the spirit of the beast descends, meaning sees only from itself onward, without the intellect or wisdom to look into the past so as to correct the future. Man's advantage over it is that the spirit of man ascends into the past and looks into the past as one looks in a mirror and sees one's flaws so as to correct them. Similarly, the mind sees what it went through and corrects its future conducts. Thus, beasts do not evolve. They are still in the same state in which they were created, for they do not have, as man does, the mirror by which to see how to correct things and gradually evolve. Man develops day by day until his merit is secured and sensed, and he will ride on the high planets. But all this refers to the natures outside of us, the nature of our surrounding reality, our food and mundane affairs. For this, the natural mind is quite sufficient. However, internally, in ourselves, although we do evolve a little, we evolve and improve by being pushed from behind through suffering and bloodshed. Since we have no tactic by which to obtain a mirror to see inside the people who lived in past generations. It is even more so regarding the interior souls and the worlds and how they came down to such a dreadful ruin as today's, where we have no security in our lives. In the coming years, we will be subject to all sorts of slaughter and death. And all admit that they have no counsel to prevent it. Imagine, for example, that some historic book were to be found today depicting the last generations 10,000 years from now. As we feel, the lesson from the suffering and torment will certainly be enough to reform them in good orders. And these people, have before them good orders sufficient to provide security and complacency, and at very least to guarantee their daily lives in peace and quiet. There is no doubt that if some sage would offer us this book about the wisdom of statesmanship and personal conduct, our leaders would seek out every counsel to arrange life accordingly, and there would be no outcry in our broad places. Corruption and terrible suffering would cease, and everything would come peacefully to its place. Now, distinguished readers, this book lays here before you in a closet. It states explicitly all the wisdom of statesmanship and conducts of private and public life that will exist in the end of days, meaning the books of Kabbalah. In it, the corrected worlds that emerged with the perfection are set, as it says, perfection emerges first from the Creator. Then we correct it and come to the perfection that exists in the upper words, emerging from Ein Sof, as in the end of an act is in the preliminary thought, because the incomplete extends gradually from the complete, and there is no absence in the spiritual. They are remain existing, depicted in their complete perfection, in particular and in general in the wisdom of Kabbalah. Open these books, and you find that all the good orders will appear at the end of days, and you will find within them the good lesson by which to arrange the mundane manners today as well, for we can learn from the past and by this correct the future. A call of the chosen ones. I, the writer, know myself and my place that I am not among the finest human race. And if one such today is
asher lefi da'ati,
I do believe an estimate that shall suffice to gather all the chosen ones to begin and study and delve in the books, so they may sentence themselves and the entire world to the side of merit.
Yes, Niv.
The
wisdom of Kabbalah that engages in revealing godliness, what can it offer humanity in man that is entirely only interested in filling his will to receive?
That he'll never receive that, but from generation to the next it's going to get worse. And if he wants things to be better for now and for the next generations, then he has to think about how to correct the generation. What can he do? The wisdom of Kabbalah does not offer you instantly to fulfill your will to receive. Rather, it explains to you that if you replace your will to receive to in order to bestow, then you'll have all the goodness in the world.
So
for now, how can it give advice to organize society and courtrooms and education? What's the connection between Kabbalah and all this?
Kabbalah tells you that if you correct yourself, then your relationship with the global system of the world will be balanced, and then you'll feel that you're in a corrected good system.
And there's an expression for that in our world and the systems of life?
There will be. Of course there will. Even in our world, we will have a good life.
And
what's the order of correction? First, to try and organize things according to what we understand, according to our mind and the books of the Kabbalists, or first correct ourselves, and then we'll have the mind to make the right orders.
We first have to correct ourselves. And gradually, to the extent that we correct, we feel that by that, we enter a better world and an increasingly better and better gradually.
So
when he writes us now that we're going to read how the courtroom has to be and how to divide things correctly, we can't do that before we correct ourselves.
Correct. But from that we should see the plan that is ahead of us.
What does it mean to see the plan? The plan is that we have to correct ourselves first.
Yes.
So supposedly it can just confuse me that I'm reading, oh, this is how I have to do it. I understand in my brain how to do it. I might try and organize my life according to the advice of the Kabbalists before I corrected myself.
It's not going to work for you. You'll feel that you can't.
So
is there a mutuality between the two, or to try and do it parallel, to organize myself in society, or first focus on correcting myself and then start organizing society?
From myself to society.
And before that, not to try to order.
How will you rearrange society if you yourself are broken?
Tada.
Woman, PT6.
Thank you, Rav. We saw yesterday in the noon lesson how we break the walls and expand the hall to convene all the representatives of humanity, which are our friends, in the coming Congress. My question is, how will the coming Congress affect us to bring us closer to that state that Bala Sulam describes, a good state for humanity?
How many people can we have in here after we renovate?
Yesterday I heard that they were talking about 2,000 people. Yeah, 2,000 people comfortably in terms of being in the lesson, in the meal, with air conditioning and so forth.
And what was it till now?
So far we could have 1,300.
So another 700 people.
Yes.
That is great. Okay. So, well, wait. Let's expect it to happen.
Woman Latin 15.
Women Latin 15.
Gracias, Raf. Retomando lo que comenta que no hemos llegado al estado que usted.
About what you said, that we haven't reached to the state you expected.
Han tenido un gran avance.
If there are friends who have advanced a lot in the work in the 10, maybe crossed the barrier, if it's so, how can they help us?
Every day we have to expect it to come and take place, that connection between us to such an extent that the Creator can be revealed in it to all created beings. It's not our calculation, it's not our feeling, isn't whether it's incorrect or correct. It completely doesn't belong to it. We have to yearn for it. And I understand that it can happen. It happens from day to day, more and more. We understand more and more, we feel more and more, we aim ourselves more and more, and in this way, it'll happen. It will happen. I'm sure that the Creator will, in our generation, already prepare a nice surprise for us in that. I'm hoping.
Yesterday, Dudi sent an excerpt from the noon lesson about opening the heart, that we really have just one last blow left to agree with the opening of the heart towards the friends and that it all connects. How do we do that?
What's written there, Dudi?
It's words that you said yesterday. Each and every one should somewhat open his heart, feel what's in his heart, and agree to connect what comes out of his heart to what comes out of the friends' hearts. That all these prayers will come out of the heart and rise directly to the Creator together. And then the Creator won't be able to refuse and won't be able to wait. He'll immediately respond. I very much expect this to happen. Very much.
I said that. Oh, I'm a poet. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really expecting it. That it will happen. It'll happen. It'll happen soon.
Ken.
Yeah.
Ma.
What? That Malik will ask again?
Ken.
So how do we open the heart to each other? How do we agree to the opening of the friend's heart?
I think that if each one of us will open his heart, it will obligate the others to open their heart. None of us will be able to remain with a closed heart. It won't depend on him. If a friend will come with a truly open heart, by this he opens my heart. Right, Shimon? So we are before the opening of our general heart, and I have no doubt that we won't have to wait for more generations. But in our generation, it will happen.
Yes.
Using this opportunity, we will also say that the Sukkot Congress, the topic is opening the heart. We want to engage in that, delve into it, read, study, open the heart. Simple as that.